We'll just start talking and keep drinking. Ready? Hello! Welcome! It's Totally Local Podcast, people! That's right, your entrance to the Jersey Shore, Monmouth County, Ocean County, every county, well, those two counties, no other counties, sorry. Jersey Shore, just in that area, colorful characters, businessmen, entrepreneurs, business people, business women, everybody that's doing business is on this show, okay? And this week, we have some lovely, lovely guests. We got a panel discussion. I got to thank our first guest, Mr. Russell from The Watermark. Thank you so much for putting this together. It was your idea to have the round table kind of view-like discussion to have us all on at the same time. Russell, I've known you for years and years and years. We go way back.
We do.
Okay. Man of few words, believe it or not. We have also from Sackman Realty, we have Morgan Sackman. Hello. How's it going?
Hello.
We also have Nicole Chondo from Sackman Realty. Hello. How's it going?
Good.
And of course, without a doubt, we have Aaron Levine, who from LG Insurance, who Russell got real excited this morning when I said, yeah, we're going to have Adam Levine on. He's like, I love Adam Levine. I was like, I'm
brother
sorry.
From another mother.
He got even more excited when I said it was Aaron Levine from LG Insurance.
That's so nice. Thank you. More tequila. Más tequila, as they say, right?
With you know, the help, we couldn't obviously do this without the tremendous support and help of Ming Chen from A Shared Universe Podcast Studio, setting it all up, making sure it all works, working out the kinks. Guys, I'm excited to be here. Are you guys happy to be here, at least? Moderately excited? A little bit?
Excited.
We're sun's excited. Out. There's some people on the boardwalk. There's some tequila in everybody's glass but mine. I'll go refill it in a minute, but it's a perfect day here on the AP Boardwalk and at the Watermark. Thanks, Russell, for having us.
It's my pleasure.
This is a great studio, Ming.
It's nice to have some people in my otherwise lonely office. I sit here by myself drinking all day long. So it's nice to have some friends join me today.
At least you have this beautiful, beautiful view. Russell, actually, I don't know if he remembers this. He probably doesn't know, probably doesn't care, but he gave me my start in Asbury Park. I've since retired from DJing to the shock of Leo Mack. He's really disappointed. Shout outs to Leo. We miss you. Russell, I DJed here. Somebody recommended, Ralph Gould, shout out to Ralph, recommended I DJ for it was for a band, some album opening thing, and you saw me DJing, and believe it or not,
I do remember that now.
You invited me back.
Yeah, I do remember that. That was, I think, in my second or third year of business. It was either 2009 or 2010.
Yeah, it was back then.
After I had opened Watermark, and I had originally conceived of Watermark not to have any live entertainment, but once the economic downturn of 2008 and 2009 came, I had to
open up a little bit.
Open it up a little bit, and someone came to me and said, "What would you think about booking some local bands on a Wednesday night?" Which this venue was sitting here dark, and of course said, "Sure, let's try it." And I wound up meeting people like you, but I do remember that. I do remember that meeting. You were the entertainment in between, because I think they used to. Kara Pellegrini booked that for me, and sometimes she would have three or four bands because they only had three or four songs, so they had to have entertainment in between, and I do remember enjoying you probably more than I did those bands.
That's right, people. It was a lot of fun.
I kept you and got rid of the bands.
No more bands. The sound is incredible in here.
You mean for live music?
For DJing, if you pump it, it's like, you know.
We certainly designed the room to sound good, yeah. Absolutely.
So, I mean, it's, and I remember also being able to, you know, play out here on the deck area and just, you know, Sunday vibes early, beautiful out, you know, you eat an edible, you hang out, you relax, and you DJ. It's a good time.
Why are your turntables not set up right now? Like, if you want to get this nostalgic, there should be some house music playing. We have all the cushions out, and we should really just
That'll be next time. It feels a little, we got like a definitely some kind of MTV party vibe going on here. We need some more scrunchies and neon, and we could do some kind of like throwback, you know, just throwing it out there. So, Sackman Realty, You guys, I remember going to see the, I want to call it the Esperanza building. It's on like Madison. What is that building called?
Steinbeck,
I think, with the theater inside it, like the old theater. That's like
the Savoy.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
The Kinman building. Kinman building, yes.
And I remember that's the first time I met you, Morgan.
Yeah.
And I was like, it really opened my eyes to the idea of there's this hidden Asbury Park. There's a vibe here beneath everything, in the heart of it, in like the veins. You know, you have people coming here, drawn here magnetically to the area. Obviously, you know, the beach is great and beautiful, but there's also this like historic like underbelly to everything.
It's like an energy, basically. It's like you see that in like the architecture and the history of what's here. And I think even people don't realize what is not even built yet in Asbury, like the open space, the buildings that still aren't restored, that like can be in the next 5 to 10 years to turn that over. But I think definitely like the history of Asbury is what drew us here, and just it's what drives a lot of people, just that energy. It's very unlike any place
definitely
really in the country.
It's definitely different. And I see that, you know, through social media and Facebook over the last, say, I'd say few years, you're really kind of pushing more out there to let people know what you guys are doing, mm-hmm. let you know what buildings are around, what's available. What's, you know, before we get into all the current things, I mean, what kind of drew you to the area and wanting to really get involved in all the real estate and stuff that's here?
Personally, I came down just working for the summer and did not know much. Uh-huh. And obviously, my dad had been down here, I think it was like 15 years. He came down, obviously, because basically the energy, the history of it, he's definitely into historic restoration. But I didn't know much. And I think that I always say I was supposed to be here for a summer, and now it's 8 years later. That you just, there's no place like it where it is a small town, but you have big ideas, big kind of problems to deal with, but it definitely like hooks you and you want to be a part of it. You want to be a part of seeing it grow. But in the last like 2 years, I would say that we've definitely like grown. We're growing outside of Asbury. Sacman Realty is kind of another branch of Sacman Enterprises, which is why we brought in Nicole, that we're taking like outside listings. We're really trying to like get our hooks into the extended area around here.
Oh.
So that's really what started with like the Sacman Realty part of it.
So you mentioned Nicole sitting to your right.
Yes.
Give us the origin story. You grew up on a farm in Kansas. They found you.
Semi-local.
Okay.
Middlesex County, but I've been in Monmouth, Ocean Township area for 25 years now.
Nice.
We met kind of in an interesting way. I actually had the listing of the property they purchased on Cookman Avenue.
Uh-huh.
Used to be Robert Legere's design studio, and I was the listing agent. We met, they interviewed me for the position to open up a new office for real estate, and here we are a year later, just celebrated our 1 year anniversary, July 1st.
That's great. Well, congratulations. What do you, have you frequented the Asbury Park area before that, or have you just been introduced?
For years, yeah. Uh-huh. I'm local. I was actually in Allenhurst for many years, selling real estate for 21, definitely ate my way through Asbury over the past 5 years, and then some.
Yeah.
So enjoying it thoroughly now, almost too much so. Lunches every day and whatnot, but it's been a great experience. Great company to work for and with.
Have you, then I assume you've frequented the Watermark before you've been here?
Absolutely.
Yes.
It's, many times.
I remember too, you know, we would do these parties and Russell is very like composed. He's very professional, I'd say 99% of the time. And then there's this one, so you start off with Russell, he's
drink,
like.
Until people dance on the furniture and then I lose it.
Well, what I was going to say was he'll tell you don't keep the mood, keep the vibe, keep it going. And then you jump cut to Russell at like 12 midnight. He's on the bar dancing. he's spinning around. He has a drink in his hand. Very graceful. But he definitely knows, you know, when to push it, when to not push it. And if it ever goes too far, he'll always point and say, stop doing that. And he's pointing at you from the top of the bar. Aaron, speaking top of the bar. Top
insurance
of the morning.
Guy does not like dancing on furniture either.
Dangerous.
Just saying.
Aaron, what's up with you? I hear it's been a busy couple days.
If I can just take a sigh of relief and enjoy this view, because my phone is still blowing up
mm-hmm.
with insurance claims. You would never know by what we have today and last night that a major storm blew through here and wreaked, can I say it, fucking havoc in our neighborhoods throughout the entire state.
Yeah. Right?
Not just locally, but we got smashed all over the place. And it was a quick little bugger that came through and really knocked down a lot of trees, power lines. A lot of businesses are out and not able to get up and running. I'm glad that Watermark is safe and sound. Like on Facebook, Mark's safe from Isaias. Come get a drink at 4 o'clock when the doors open. Right, 4 o'clock?
4 o'clock, yes.
I got it, down pat. But yeah, it's been a mess. It's been a bit of a show lately, but I'm glad that this is where, I guess, as the insurance guy, I earn my keep.
Uh-huh.
I make money by selling stuff, but I earn it by helping people when they need it.
They call you.
Getting claims in, and they call me, they have questions. You know, the guy that has a tree limb on his, you know, hanging on another tree in his backyard that's like, oh, what do I do? I'm like, oh, you're SOL. But then there's the guy that's...
Is that the official term? Is that what's
Yeah,
the
is
policy?
That what I told you with that tree in your backyard?
Yeah. Oh, man. Basically, yeah, I had a tree go down in my backyard. You'd think oaks were, like, you know, stronger. I don't want to get into... This isn't an arborist, you know, podcast, but, you know, you think those white oaks would be a little sturdier than they are. Thank God I had one oak, a healthy oak. The bad one fell over, and it just got kind of caught. In the good one, they're both ruined. I had a guy, I called like six different tree people, tree talk people. I called six different companies, and one finally came out. It's like $2,500 to get it done. I had to Google it just to make sure what the average cost is, and that's definitely way above the average cost. But, you know, what are you going to do when you're SOL and there's nobody
you're
else?
SOL.
To,
you need the service, and if you got one guy out of six that's willing to do it,
yeah.
You know, unfortunately, you pay the price. And it's just that's something that's not covered by a homeowner's insurance policy.
Yeah.
Because it's not in your house. You're still living in your house. You don't have a tree through your roof. Those guys with the trees in their roofs, we feel bad for them, and they have a real issue.
It's like leaning, right? I wake up every morning, and it's like it's leaning at our house. That one tree caught us. Epic shouts to the Virgin Mary statue that's out in front of that tree. The broken one, the Mary statue right in front of it. Epic shouts to my wife that put it there. It's like it's broken, but right there, she's just holding it up. And my wife was like, should we move that for the tree people? I'm like, no, I'm leaving her right there until this is all taken care of. Then I will move her out of the way. She's holding it up right now. Not to get too much into the weeds as the insurance talk, but like people are calling you and like wondering if like, hey, there's a tree, everything's messed up. But trees aren't really for home insurance unless you like add it on somehow.
Unless it's unless the tree is laying on the house, the rule is there's no coverage. Now, there are certain exceptions to that rule for different types of policies for larger properties that might have some tree coverage built in. But you get what you pay for.
And that's what you've been telling people.
Part. Yeah, I've been guiding people the best that I can, right? Mm-hmm. And I also tell people, if it's just your refrigerated food, do not put a claim in. Like, if Ming can zoom in right now and give me that feature, don't file a claim for just the food in your fridge. Like, seriously, your rate's going to go up by $2,000 a year for you to get $300 back. Like, totally not worth it.
Totally not worth it. Totally local podcast, bringing it back around.
I have a question for you.
I'll bring it.
There we go.
About the tree situation. If a tree falls on someone's house, but the tree's actually in a neighbor's property, who's responsible for that?
This is a great one because I've had 10 of these conversations in the last 24 hours, right? So the tree's yours, or the tree is a property owner's but falls on someone else's house. The property that's damaged, that homeowner should call the claim in because they're going to have coverage for it on their homeowner's policy. And where I get, you know, and this gets very, you know, legal is, you know, the rights to doing whatever you're going to do. But if it's on someone's house, that homeowner puts the claim in. Right. If it's on someone's fence, you know, make a deal with your neighbor and figure out how to get it removed. Because whatever's on falls on someone else's property is kind of their responsibility, even though it's your tree.
Right.
Now, I tell people if your neighbor has a lot of old, big, dead trees, that if you think your property is being threatened by them, you send them a legal notice. You send them a certified letter saying, hey, your trees look scary. I think you should trim them back. Then you have a recourse because then you've given notice, and then there's negligence. Now, we need a lawyer to come and finish the rest of this conversation up here. But if it's on someone else's house, they call the claimant on their homeowners. If that insurance company wants to come after your insurance, they can do that. But, you know, wherever the tree lies should call the claimant is where I guide people for the most part.
How did your little Shangri-La in Asbury Park do? Your home's okay? Nothing bad?
Nothing bad. I did have a tree come down as well. Much like yours, it went into another tree, so there wasn't any property damage with it. But I went on Amazon yesterday, mm-hmm. and I bought a chainsaw.
I was so scared you were going to say that. I
bought
frightened.
A chainsaw, and a gas-powered one, not an electric one.
Yeah, good.
Because I had one of those before. I called it my Hello Kitty chainsaw, and it didn't do very well. But I bought a big boy chainsaw, and it's supposed to be arriving to my house on Saturday, and I'm going to be one of those annoying people
because we buy everything on Amazon
in my backyard.
Just please Google how to cut a tree down. Don't just go out there, you know, and just start chopping away. You got to angle that stuff.
Please hire a professional.
Yeah, they'll charge you $2,500, but you won't, you know, damage anything. Well, good
Less
luck with
tequila.
That. I want
Thank
pictures
you very much.
Before and after. I hope you have good coverage. I don't know what kind of coverage you need for chainsawing a tree down yourself and seeing where it lands.
As long as there's nobody else around you, you're on your own.
Okay.
You're fine.
All right, cool.
Have at it. No tequila.
It's one of those if a tree falls in a forest and no one's around type of things. I see.
Know. 10 fingers, 10 toes. Just remember that. You want to keep all of them.
Yeah, I hope you ordered some like gloves or some kind of protective helmet or something. So you're opening up at 4.
I'm opening up at 4, and thank you for that shout out, Aaron. I appreciate it, and I just have to acknowledge and do a shout out to all of the other restaurants and businesses that are not open today because of this storm.
Yeah.
I was just reading this morning that the entire island, Long Beach Island, they have no electricity. I can't, and they're not expecting to get electricity back for 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
Much of Red Bank is out. Our friend Amy Russo, who owns Toast, she's not able to be open. So on top of this pandemic, on top of all the other stuff that we're dealing with, there are many, many people and many businesses that are having to throw out all of the food in their refrigerator, unfortunately. So I am open at 4 today, and I feel very, very fortunate and very lucky, and I just want to say that I'm thinking of all the other businesses out there that don't have the privilege that I have today.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that like brings up a good point as far as local businesses. I really love this area. That's why I do this, you know, silly podcast. I mean, it's fun, obviously, but there's a vibe, like I said before, and I love Monmouth County. I even love Ocean County. I love you, Ocean County. You know, don't worry. I'll be down to Tom's River soon enough. Don't worry. But you know, it's amazing to see. You know, I've talked about obviously Sandy before, and it's amazing to see, you know, businesses coming together and neighbors coming together, helping each other out. I saw it this morning on one side of the street, the power's out. On the other, it's not. People are like helping each other out. Did Sandy like prepare you as far as what's going on right now? Did Sandy kind of get you kind of geared up to expect the unexpected, or is that just something that comes with time, no matter what kind of business or what kind of, you know?
That's a very good question. I think for me personally, I had quite a few different experiences that allowed some preparation for this.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, I'm a gay man of a certain age. I came out in Los Angeles in 1986, right in the middle of the AIDS, right sort of in the beginning of the AIDS epidemic. I went my entire 20s. I lived in Los Angeles, and I probably attended 30 funerals by the time I was 30 years old. So I had a master class in the politicalization of our health system, and not only on top of that, but being part of a marginalized community at that time. So all of us that went through the AIDS crisis got a master class in how to deal with these types of health issues. I was living in New York for 9/11.
Mm.
There's a lot of that comes back into this. Obviously, Superstorm Sandy taught us a lot, but I actually think by the time I went through Sandy, I'd been through a couple of other, as I just mentioned, the economic downturn of 2008. I signed the lease here with Madison Marquette in 2007 when the Esperanza was being built.
Yeah.
So I decided
to build a bit more of an upscale, high-class establishment here because of what was being built across the street. Uh-huh. Otherwise, I would have done something much more, you know, regular beach bar approach. But I decided as a reaction to this beautiful development across the street that I could lift my product a little bit higher. Well, a year later, the Esperanza stops being developed, and I'm sitting down here practically by myself in what, you know, most people would consider to be a luxury brand bar. So I had to change my course very, very quickly. And the first 3 years of owning Watermark were really, really tough. I was undercapitalized when I opened. I lost a couple of investors. And I don't know how I made it through, but that was also an amazing lesson. So I feel like I was probably as prepared as anyone could be, but you never think about things like this. You just, you know, there is no way to really be prepared for them. But was I shocked? No.
Do you think that if you approached opening this business in a way where, you know, you could put it in a spreadsheet, you could have all your numbers and figures and figure all this stuff out. If you laid it out mathematically and looked at it, do you think you would have approached it with the same zeal as approaching it, say, from just a passionate, you know, motivation, meaning like you wanted to do this and that's kind of what drove you, as opposed to, you know?
Well, I think it depends on if you're self-financed, mm-hmm. or if you're raising money. If you're having to go out with any business idea and raise money and get investors to literally invest in your idea, you're going to have that spreadsheet. You're going to have to give something to your investors that they feel that you are going to take their money and do right by it. A passion project is very different, and most people who are doing passion projects are probably self-funding those, where uh-huh. you have a little bit more autonomy and you have a bit more independence. So it really depends on where you're getting your money.
How did you learn? How did you learn to do that? How do you learn to, like, I'm going to go out and I'm gonna get investors?
Keep practicing.
I'll tell you how I learned it. I was in the entertainment industry for many years, uh-huh. and I was living in New York when I bought my second home down here, and I was developing theater and producing shows on Broadway. And Broadway is a masterclass at learning how to take an intellectual property and flesh it out on paper and go out and sell shares and raise all your money. So I opened Watermark. I created Watermark, and I funded it, and I marketed it just like I did my Broadway shows. So you create all of your material, you create your story, you create your music and your script, and you go out and you let everyone know you're raising money for this intellectual property. And I did. I raised every dollar through outside investment. I personally didn't have any money mm-hmm. to invest in this business when I opened it up. I had to raise 100% of my
wow.
entire investment. I have 23 individual investors in Watermark.
What was that? You know, was there a lot of, you know, out of the 23, did you like approach 2,300? Were people really receptive because they knew you?
I sent it out to absolutely every single person that I know.
Wow.
And one of the things that I learned from a producer in New York was send your packet, your pitch packet, out to every single person you know, because you never know who's going to wind up investing.
Uh-huh.
And case in point, I got a call one day from a sweet lady who lives here in Asbury Park, who worked in the flower department part-time at Wegmans.
Uh-huh.
And we were friendly. And she said, I wondered why you didn't send me a packet for Watermark. And I went, I apologize about that. I will send it to you. And she said, you know, I work at Wegmans because I need something to do with my time, but I have money. And I went, okay. All right. And she wound up writing me a very big check.
Wow. There you go. You never know,
so
people.
You never know who might be interested in investing in your idea.
So, Andrew, what's the pitch? What are you working on?
You're looking at it. It's totally
the three
local.
Of us are over here drinking, taking shots, and you guys are having a very intimate conversation. No, I love it. But, Andrew, what's going through your head right now?
I've got so many ideas. You know, I just need somebody like Russell to, like, you know, I guess I got to present present my ideas to you, and then you could tell me which ones are wrong, which ones are right.
You know, I don't know if I have that.
We can Shark Tank you.
Yeah, exactly.
I love Shark Tank. I love Shark Tank. So, it's one of my favorite shows.
So,
local Shark Tank edition coming up.
It's coming.
I would love that.
Morgan, do you see, are people coming now to Sacman Realty with ideas? Are people looking at what's going on right now? In some sense, as an opportunity, obviously some businesses are not doing good, but as the limited amount of knowledge I have as far as real estate goes, you know, mortgage rates are good. Yeah. People are buying real estate.
No, I mean, there's obviously like horrible things happening, and then there are good things in real estate that are happening. I mean, tons of New York people are flooding down into the market. I would say in terms of businesses, because I deal with a lot of the commercial, like, obviously, we had some things going on before the pandemic with hospitality, and that is slowing down. But there are people that are looking like a year out, because usually projects take that long.
Yeah.
And know that this will soon pass eventually. And I mean, obviously, people have different opinions on like when that would happen. But there are people that are like, no, I want to kind of continue moving forward and put this project together. And then in terms of just like the real estate market in general, at Sacman Realty, the housing market has been crazy just because of New York. And then also we have a lot of like small office space, and that is just insane because you have the people that are working from home, but they want their kind of smaller office to be away from like their family or just...
That's right. It's real hard to get stuff out of.
I was like, I literally have like wives calling me like, my husband needs to get out of the house. I'm like, we have an office.
That's why we're broadcasting live from the Watermark. We can't do it from home.
Yeah, definitely.
But so it's interesting. I mean, for me, it's like a different story because I was even saying like before this, like I didn't work through like 2008. And so this is like a new experience of like, I heard everyone who like my family and obviously Nicole, they're like, well, during these times, during the downturns, and I hadn't really like experienced that yet. So it's really kind of talking to the people that have been through it to really like grasp on like, you gotta get creative. Like there are opportunities that are there even if it seems like nothing is going forward. So it's, for me, it's like the first experience of that, just to understand how to grapple with the changing times that happened so quickly. So I don't know, it's just a very, strange times.
It's strange times. There's opportunities strange. When things are tumultuous, obviously, yeah. But you just definitely need the, you know, you need either the investors, you need the capital, you need some way of procuring that kind of, you know, money to put into a project. Are there any kind of like, are there any kind of business, you mentioned office space, obviously retail is difficult. I've talked to owner of a different real estate company. You know, some landlords, as far as retail goes, some landlords are working with their tenants. It really depends on what type of property it is. If it's like an A+ type property and the tenant can't pay, you know, they might get a boot. They might, you know, have to sign some kind of, you know, new agreement as far as like, look, we'll let you stay, but if something else comes up, we're getting you out of here. Yeah. There are other instances where the landlord will say, look, you know, nothing's going to be happening in this spot. So we want, you know, we like you guys. We want you to stay here. So we're going to give you a little leniency. Are you seeing stuff like that going
on? And we've been trying to, just because, I mean, hopefully this won't be more than a year that goes on, but I think even, I'm pretty sure I can speak for management that they've communicated like, we'll ride this out for a year, just like tell us where you are in the situation, because at the end of the day, even with us, like they were doing really well before the pandemic. So during this time, like, I mean, it's gonna, to ride it out together is just like a better option. And then obviously just for the fact that they've had a relationship with us for that long a time, it's obviously just like a better situation for everyone.
I mean, it's interesting to think about, and I wanna know what you guys all think about this, because, you know, some people I'm talking to and they're like, oh, when we get back to normal, I'm like, there is no more normal.
This is
normal.
I would say that was like, so with Sandy, that was like the first year I was down here, and I feel like it was over and you're like, okay, I need to maybe take this step and that step. But with this, I feel like it's been a little different for me because the uncertainty is like a big thing to deal with. Like, when will we be back? Like, mm-hmm. So it's just kind of like you want to move forward in a direction to make things better. But it's like you have to go 5 different ways at once to prepare for like a lot of different options. So that's just like the difficulty.
Has anyone kind of witnessed any kind of What I think is going to happen from a technological standpoint is there's going to have to be certain checks on a very basic level. You've seen places like Epic shouts to Joe's Bagel in Belmar. I love that place. And they were one of the first people I saw had plexiglass like going up. You know, and that's a pretty simple technological advancement where it's just like, all right, we got to do this. They did it really quickly. I've talked to people about temperature checks, like say at a club, mm-hmm. people are coming in. Not only are you IDing them, but you're like scanning their forehead to make sure they're not at like 120 fever. You know,
so we don't care what drugs are in their pocket. Just, what's your temperature? You're good now.
You're good. Well, the metal detector, temperature check, ID. Like I would imagine that in certain instances, like. Technology, you have to adapt or evolve. Like, have you thought about any of this stuff going into the future? Like, what you're going to see? You know, things, you know, different things occurring or different ways of looking at.
We have temperature checks at our office. We've kind of discussed like the UV lights. We don't really know if like people will feel that's too invasive because right now it's just office buildings right now.
Yeah.
But no, you want to make people feel comfortable, and obviously you want to be safe as well. But it's definitely something we've looked into a lot.
Yeah, and in terms of residential, just showing the properties has changed completely. We have to have our clients sign a hold harmless form before entering into our home.
I didn't even think about
that. They haven't been sick or they're not exposed to someone who's been sick. We're wearing gloves. We're surgical. We go in with gloves, booties, mask, everything. And what's kind of nice, actually, because nobody really wants to touch somebody's doorknobs and closets and light switches, everything's on when we go in. They leave the doors open, the lights are on, so we're not really touching any of their personal everyday items, so we're just walking through.
What about like virtual, like Madripoort or something where you can, you just don't get the same feel of a place if it's like virtual?
For residential, it's such an emotional purchase in your life to walk through a home and feel that you can see yourself there. It's hard to do that virtually. There are people who do it, but it's not common.
Have you sold a house sight unseen?
I'm actually negotiating one now. They're in California, and it's a summer home in Point Pleasant. We're negotiating it. But they did have their brother and sister-in-law come out and do a Facebook live walkthrough, whatever. So it was very not the same as like an online virtual tour. Yeah. It was a little more personal. They pointed out all the things that you would look for. Whereas a realtor's not going to do that, so.
Cash deal, I just want to know.
Cash deal.
Did you refer me for the insurance? I'm just following up on it.
I want to address something, too. I saw a bumper sticker, which I've seen before, and I'll probably see it again, but it said, like, Benny's go home. And I want you guys to know that the respectful Benny's, we love you guys. You come down, you spend money, as long as you clean up your trash and you don't wear, you know, black socks on the beach. I don't know why you're doing that, but stop doing that. But like, I think that maybe the youngsters out there or maybe the townies that don't understand that like people from out of town are coming here in the summer and they're spending money and you don't have to be polite to them, but there's nothing wrong with a smile or a wave every now and then. Some people might get scared.
Except you're in a mask, no smiles.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's true. Nods.
Smiling.
Nods, thumbs up is good. You know,
but I will say, like, I heard some noise outside my house, and I live in Monmouth Beach, pretty quiet. And there was a bunch of teenagers like on my corner, like hanging out on my side yard. So I turned the sprinklers on them because they were loud and the kids were sleeping and, you know, they all dispersed
because
I could, you know, with the app. The next morning going out, there's trash all over my fucking lawn.
Yeah.
So
that's
we blame the Bennies.
Yeah.
But it's also our residents are, you know, leaving just as much trash around.
Yeah. So respect your surroundings.
We love the Bennies. We love people from out of town coming in, from whether they're coming from the west or the north or the south. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, we are in a shore community from Sandy Hook down to Long Beach Island and beyond, right? Like, we're in a seaside community that we need all this money coming into town for our restaurants, for our hotels, for our great outdoor bars. Like, it's part of how we live, you know?
Tourism to the entire shore region, but certainly to Asbury Park. I mean, I wouldn't have the success I have here without tourists. It's just, it's part of it.
When you invite, you know, you mentioned living up in New York, you know, getting ideas, investment, stuff like that from colleagues up in New York. I'm assuming that you would invite them down. They would, you know, people that you know from the big city would come down and like spend some time down here. Have you gotten mostly positive reactions from the out of towners that come down?
Sure.
Check it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, as Morgan was saying, you know, Asbury Park has a certain quality and a certain mystique to it. And I think people who live in urban areas like Philly and New York, I think they can identify and associate with our little city by the sea. Even though Asbury Park is only 1.4 square mile and we do often operate and act like a small town, we are incorporated as a city. So we have our central business district and our you know, different zones. And I think people that come down here from New York and other cities have a connection just because of the way it was originally laid out and planned and designed and architecture. But being right up against the coast like this is obviously a super unique thing for a city. Most other places along the shore are townships for the most part, and they don't have the heart and soul of Asbury Park. They don't have the culture, and I think that's what most people respond to when they come to Asbury. It's a small, it kind of feels like a small town, but there's culture here.
Yeah. It felt too, and I mean, obviously, I think all of you will have like something to say about this, but like it feels like obviously we're butted up against the ocean and people are kind of moving further west. There's businesses, more businesses, commercial stuff going on Maine. Our good friend Adam over at Yes Graphic is on like the north opposite side, you know, all the way down there. He has an awesome property, you know, where for all your printing needs, go to Yes Graphic. So do you still see that even with everything that's going on now, do you see it as an opportunity, or do you see that expansion to kind of continue going down like that way? I mean, there's not a lot of places you can go around.
Bradley Beach is looking really good these days. Uh-huh. I mean, Bradley Beach, I think, I love going to Bradley Beach. And I can see the sort of cultural and entrepreneurial push that's going down Main Street in that direction.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Yeah. We've even looked into some projects outside of Asbury, going down Main Street, hitting some of the other towns. So there's a lot of opportunity there.
What's the are people there receptive? The council, the mayor, and stuff, are they receptive to like the idea of like opening? I lived in Bradley Beach. I love Bradley Beach. There wasn't a lot going on in Bradley Beach when I lived there. I saw the residential property values like going straight up. There was maybe like two bars there to hang out in. The train is there, which is great. I can't imagine them wanting to open up more like nightlife, but do you see more like retail going in there? Do you see like the politics there kind of opening up to the possibility of having more things going on there?
I mean, I don't necessarily know Bradley Beach. I would say we've gone to some other like towns in the area, and I think it's almost like nice that they're responsive to, oh, you guys did this in Asbury. And those are different towns that maybe want a little more of a town center and to bring more retail. So there, I think that it's a great thing that they'll look and like as Asbury is almost like a something that they could bring to their town. Yeah. But I would say obviously they're not as urban as this area. It's kind of a smaller landscape than what's here.
What other businesses, aside from, you know, wonderful nightlife, clubs, bars, restaurants and stuff, what could you all see kind of as a business that you would like to see more of down here, you know?
I would say that we, just specifically for our retail, we do need a little more of like the daytime foot traffic. We have a lot of people that come in on the weekends, so really getting maybe some daytime office, I think, would help make it more of a cohesive community, like frequent a lot of the businesses during the day. So I kind of see that a little as like a missing point of our area, just because a lot of people are here at night, but if you come even during the week in the summer, sometimes it can get not as many people around. Yeah. So just
I would agree with that.
Traffic.
I think we've certainly gotten our fill of restaurants and bars and food and beverage establishments. We've established Asbury Park as a food and beverage town, but I would also agree that we need to get more businesses in here that have day traffic for our cafes and stuff for lunch. But yeah, we need to get more industry in here, and I would love to see Memorial and our industrial zone sprout up with more businesses and that can take over that part of Asbury that I think is sorely missing right now.
No, I agree. Yeah.
There was a lot of development. I don't know where it is now, but along Memorial, they were doing a lot of development or had things in the works.
Yes.
It seems like it wouldn't necessarily be... It seems like forging ahead, maybe I'm naive, but it seems like forging ahead is kind of the way to go because like you were saying before, there are downturns. My mom does real estate, you know, she's been doing it since the 80s. So, you know, she always says you gotta, you know, there's, she kind of approaches it sort of in a way where it's like inevitably it's a wave. It's going to go up, it's going to go down, and you kind of have to keep kind of forging ahead. Aaron, when are you moving the LG office to Asbury Park?
As soon as I get more parking.
Parking is in.
Because, you know, truth be told, Morgan and I did have a conversation about a year and a half ago when I was moving my office, you know, to maybe come down to Asbury Park. But, you know, we're humble in our West Long Branch with a big parking lot. And
it is an issue, like competing with when people are looking in the area because they get to go to these places where it's free parking and... We don't really have that in the downtown, so that's like definitely something that I compete with and is an issue right now. But we are, I mean, the city is building a deck. We're trying to build a deck, so hopefully it will come.
More parking in Asbury Park. You heard it.
Asbury Parking on the next Totally Local. We'll be scanning areas in and around. I mean, the kids have Uber now. They can get around. You know, it's safer, supposedly. I don't know.
Pre-COVID.
Pre-COVID. Driving-wise, drinking and driving-wise. So, Russell, where do you see... it's a vibe here, man. It's like going to Watermark and going to, like, a party. The people that don't know, but, like, the anniversary party, the birthday parties for Watermark, when that would roll around, I would look forward to it because it's just fun. It's just if you get a nice booth seat and you put your jacket down and you could save that spot and then you could dance up and down, you know, all around and just have that spot to sit. Oh my God, I love it here so much. When are we gonna get back to?
That's a very good question.
Thank you.
As you know. most people that know of Watermark know of the cocktail lounge and nightclub aspect of the business. But what a lot of people don't know is I host about 150 private events here a year. Mm-hmm. I host about 50 weddings a year and engagement parties. Yes. I've been known to throw a few. I wish I could give you my prediction of when I think 150 person wedding receptions are going to not only be allowed, but feel safe.
Yeah.
I've had to move about 25 weddings this year into next year. I've lost a couple altogether. Most of my clients are just choosing to push it off for a year, which I think you said you were doing the same thing. I think the popular belief is that when we've come to a vaccine or some sort of medical marker that allows people to feel safe going back into an interior social situation where you're just, you know, on top of each other. It's one thing to go into a restaurant and dine socially distanced away from other patrons. It's another thing to be at a wedding, which I've been saying to my clients, weddings are, you know, they're basically what you want out of a wedding and what you want your guests to be able to experience is having a bunch of strangers be intimate with one another. It's a very unique thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure when that vibe, and you need confidence and safety that you're hanging out at a bar at a wedding and you can slide right up next to someone that you don't know and be in their face. And I'm not sure when that's going to return. I actually don't think it's probably going to come back. If it does, it's not going to come back strongly next year. I'm actually thinking 2022, to be honest with you, where we're going to have that comfort level where you can party your ass off with a bunch of strangers. Yeah. I just don't see it happening.
God, that's a scary thought.
I know.
Dancing and partying your ass off with strangers? Like, that's aggressive right now.
That's so it aggressive.
I do miss it. That's what weddings are about, you know? Yeah. That, weddings need a level of safety and confidence that you don't even necessarily have going out to a restaurant. But nightclubs and weddings and that type of thing, you have to feel confident. And I don't think it's going to be back next year, honestly.
It's so weird to think about that, too, because you weren't even aware of... I can't even tell you how many drunken conversations, very close proximity to absolute strangers I've had at this very establishment, and you never even thought about stuff like that. So, like, it's a whole new kind of... you know, era, and I definitely miss that a lot.
There's this thing going around the internet, like, you know, no playing Sweet Caroline in the bar anymore, no touching me, no touching you, yeah. Like, it's like going all over social media.
Well, there is.
I had that rule before.
You had very distinct rules.
For different reasons.
Certain rules, certain songs, certain, like, I don't know, I remember being here and playing, I believe it was on, it was a July 4th weekend, and I played, it was late night, people were having fun, I put some Moomba Tone on, and it got absolutely wild. And that's when I learned the trick. If you put some Bob Marley or reggae, or my favorite genre, like super fruity house music, like if you put that on, you kind of quell, like you could kind of quell the party. But it got like, it turned into some nasty grind session in the middle there, and then it got like, you know, it got crazy. But you know, it's you definitely have to...
Oh, the good old days.
The good old days.
I see pictures and I'm like, if I knew back then what would happen.
Oh man.
It's so strange.
Yeah. I was looking for some picture to use for the promotion for this, to have some kind of background. So I was flipping back through like old shots, and I'm like, wow, we used to party pretty hard. It would be pretty late. Some New Year's, I've DJed some New Year's here, and it would, you know, people would get absolutely sloppy. You were kind of like an admiral on a ship, Russell, where like you knew things were gonna get crazy. A couple people might get scurvy, you know? Some people might fall off the, you know, overboard, and you have to kind of use a lifesaver.
No. No one falls overboard at Watermark.
No, metaphorically,
yes. Yeah, we do rock the boat here, but we try and keep everyone in the boat.
Yes.
That's the balance.
I don't know how you do that. What I was getting at was that you have a way of, you're like a sensei at a dojo of like, it's controlled chaos.
It is controlled chaos, yes.
You know, walking around. You're there, but you're not there. You're overseeing it. And then all of a sudden it's 1 a.m. and you're dancing at the bar because you feel or you know that there's a certain level that you've kind of gotten it to where it's like everyone's kind of comfortable.
Absolutely. And I would say that my background in theatrical producing and concert promotion and producing, you use sound and lights and capacity in certain ways. You use them as ingredients. And you can start to feel an environment move. And I stand in the back where I have the master controls of sound.
Yeah,
and I bring them up and I bring them down. And I'm constantly bringing lights up and down and sound up and down and bringing stopping capacity at the door. So there is I do play a very functional and important role.
Mm-hmm.
I don't just allow the environment to spin out of control. I keep heavy hold on the reins, but I do let the horse gallop, and that's where the fun is. But you have to have someone that knows how to keep it in line, and I think I've over the years learned how to do that.
No heels on the cushions, people.
No feet on the cushions.
No, nothing on the cushions. Just either sit on the cushions or go dance somewhere.
And to bring it back around to insurance a little bit, one of the things that my industry, the restaurant and nightclub industry, is working on right now with the New Jersey Restaurant and Hospitality Association.
Let this helicopter go by. The eye in the sky. Hello, people.
Is what you were talking about with going into people's homes, and the contract is the no harm.
Yeah.
And we're going to try and get some legislation now where patrons in the future will not be able to hold establishments
I've gotten asked that question by every restaurant, every public venue that I insure, and it's an unknown because it hasn't been litigated yet.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And we won't know until it's been litigated, and the legislation is going to be a trick because you can't create legislation without litigation in some cases. So we don't know what it's going to look like. There's so many unknowns with this, and we've talked about other insurance-related issues around the COVID situation within public venues and employment practices liability and cyber issues. And, you know, if somebody comes to me and says, hey, I want an EPLI policy, I want that sexual harassment policy, I'm like, too bad, you can't buy one now. You know, they just don't exist
anymore.
We can't sell somebody new insurance because we already know they fucked something up at this point. So, like, the insurance industry is really tighten the reins on a lot of things.
I just got dropped by my insurance company.
Oh, then we should talk.
Here we go, people.
I got a form letter, and my broker wasn't even aware of this, but about 3 weeks ago, I got a form letter that said our company is no longer going to be carrying policies for any business that has a liquor license in the future.
That's a New Jersey thing. Carriers come in and out of the state on a regular basis. You know, that's something that happens all the time.
But I could see how companies are going to be more risk adverse about, you know, covering nightclubs.
Prices have been going up. Yeah. You know, coverage has been tough. Like, all across the board, insurance is a challenge. And as long as you're working with somebody that knows what they're doing, they'll get you well taken care of.
I should get your card. We'll talk about it.
Totally local, making connections. That's what happens. I mean, is it similar to, ever since, getting to know Aaron, getting to know, like, the insurance stuff, whenever I'm talking to anyone, whatever they're doing, I pick their brain just because I like to talk and I like to listen. So, Aaron, we've talked about flood and flood insurance in this area where during Sandy it was kind of unprecedented and nobody knew how to handle it. Is it going to be a similar situation with what's going on now?
You know, I think we, Eastern Monmouth County, and even into Eastern Ocean County, got pretty lucky with this storm because it passed us so far west. I don't know of anybody with any flood damage issues. Even going into PA, I haven't heard any major flood-related issues in our area. Just in the Carolinas, I heard of some flood-related issues. But those homes have already been raised on stilts by 15 feet for the most part, and that damage that they sustained is not even going to meet the deductible for the most part. So we got lucky on the flood stuff. So I think we're good. It's just the restaurants that still don't have power. It's the businesses that can't operate because they don't have power that got thrown another FU 2020 kind of blow. That we just want to get back up and running as quickly as possible, and whatever we have to do for them, we'll do.
So do you think it's kind of a similar situation though, that like now people are, you know, facing these unknowns, they become known, and then the insurance kind of adjusts, no pun intended, to what is actually going to happen in the future?
So, right, the insurance tightens up is what happens. Is, you know, the insurance companies pay out claims and they put more pages of exclusions into an insurance policy. You know, I love insurance. but your policy, you know, a normal business owner's policy is 125 pages, 3 pages of yes, and then, you know, 117 pages of what we're not going to cover. Uh-huh. You know, I don't want to talk bad to insurance because we're going to cover a lot of good stuff, but the insurance industry learns via litigation that they have to carve certain things out when it comes to business insurance. And as we experience downturns and events, the insurance company is like, well, the insurance wasn't meant for that. We'll pay it today. But next time, if you want that coverage, you're going to pay more for it. Like, spoilage has been an issue ongoing for years and years. And if you put in multiple spoilage claims, you're never going to buy that coverage ever again because nobody wants to sell it to you. Uh-huh. That's when they say, hey, buy a generator so your food doesn't go bad.
Yeah.
You know, so insurance is there to help you when an issue arises, but then also teach you to better protect your business and your home going forward.
I can't believe that they could just like drop you like that. Just say, it's not you, it's me, but we're done. And just...
Well, my policy is about to expire. So I get... I guess they can do whatever they want.
They can do whatever they want with notice. Yeah. So that's just how it rolls in New Jersey and even our surrounding states. It's tough.
And I believe that they used the term risk appetite, that their appetite had changed.
You are too high risk. We don't want your money anymore. It's not worth it to us.
I was curious, and obviously I'm not going to get the answer to this, but I was curious to know if this was already in the works prior to COVID or if this was a COVID scare.
It was probably prior to COVID.
Yeah.
They just found a thing to...
Yeah, it's like the flood maps. Pre-Sandy, the flood maps were already in the works, but then Sandy hit and effed everything up, and then you hear about the flood maps changing, and they're like, oh, Sandy. Yeah. No, since 2009, the flood maps were being changed, and then Sandy hit in 2012, 13, when was that? I don't even remember.
2012.
But so the map changes were already in process when the big one hit us. So carriers pulling out of the state of New Jersey was already in the works for months pre-COVID. You know, totally not COVID-related, because your risk is less now. You have fewer patrons, right? And, you know, and I guess with, I don't know what people are doing nowadays, because I stay home for the most part, unless it's a happy hour edition. There's not as many people on the roads at night, so I don't know what the drinking and driving stuff looks like nowadays, but I can't imagine it's worse than it was 6 months ago.
So everything is up in the air. People are confused. That could lead to certain opportunities. When it comes to, let's say, commercial real estate, are you talking to more people about like land and development? Are you talking about people coming into existing properties? Like, what do you see?
I would say that for obviously a while after this happened, there was kind of just a lull where no one just wanted to do anything. So there were projects in the works and everyone was kind of like, let's hold out for a second and see what happens. I mean, I would say there are still people with money who want to get into projects, but there is still of an unknown, so to get capital is a little more difficult right now. But I think that New Jersey specifically is a good area for people wanting to get into, a lot of even investors wanting to sell their buildings like in New York and come down here. So I think that we're in a better bubble compared to a lot of places, even though there's a lot of difficulties going on. I think really the market.
And residentially, if somebody has a subdividable lot, they're doing that now because there's not a lot of land in Monmouth County in general. But if they have an opportunity, they're applying. And there, a lot of them are going through.
That was big in Rumson, right? Yeah, like people Rumson, are doing that up in Rumson a lot.
Yeah, Fairhaven. Really all over the place. Neptune, there's a lot of opportunity for subdivision, and because there's such an influx of residential buyers that people are making money off of that too. Property they've been sitting on for decades. So that's also, we're seeing a little bit of a turn in that sense.
So, you know, just... just on a positive note, what are you guys going to be doing? Let's just go around... What are you guys going to be doing this weekend? Aaron, what are you doing? You got to do one thing. What are you going to be doing this weekend for fun?
Tequila. I think the weather should be nice, so we'll get the water slides out. We'll get the kids in the pools and,
tequila.
You know, have a weekend. It's all we need is some good weather and a hose and a pool, and we're golden. Life is good.
All right.
Nicole? The American dream right there.
We'll see. Usually I plan my weekend to be quiet and then I work. So little bit
don't
of
work
work,
too much.
Little bit of fun. We'll see.
Morgan, what are you up to this weekend?
I don't really have plans yet, but I live right in the downtown, and it's nice because Cookman's kind of shut down, so kind of walk out there. It's kind of a little nice just because it seems a little normal, those people around, even though it's outdoors. So no plans, but definitely will be on Cookman.
I kind of like the idea of Cookman just being kind of done, like being more of a Euro vibe where it's just an open area, but at the same time, from my friends on, you know, the adjoining streets, the traffic kind of gets a little nutty for them. Yeah. They got to figure all that out.
Think there, like, when you do something, there's obviously growing pains. I know a lot of people have talked about that, some people at the city, even before all this, so it could be kind of a test run to see if it works out. Maybe if there's kinks, we can change that. But I agree with you that maybe not all the time, but maybe during the summer, kind of shut it down when tourist season comes.
So, Russell, we all know that you're basically going to be playing with your new chainsaw this weekend. I just want you to be safe. Are you right or left-handed, okay?
I am right-handed.
Okay, all right, well, protect.
But I am going away this weekend. Even though my chainsaw arrives on Saturday, I will not be able to use it until Monday. Right. I am actually taking a trip.
Oh, wow.
I know. I am leaving tomorrow morning, and I'm going to Fire Island for 3 days.
Nice.
I know.
Did you used to, like, when Fire Island was, like, the shit? Were you up in Fire Island, like?
Yeah.
Oh my God, we're gonna have a whole nother.
Can we start the video again?
Oh my God!
After podcast storytelling session,
I'm coming back. I didn't even know. There's this whole past. Like, L.A., New York. You were everywhere.
I came to Asbury Park to settle down. And this is the business I came up with. No, I lived in New York full time for 10 years, I had a summer home. In Fire Island. It's where I met my now husband of 20 years. And Andrew and I, my husband, had planned on renting a home for our 20th anniversary back in this past June, mm-hmm. which obviously didn't happen. So a friend invited us out for the weekend. So we're going to go out and sit at our friend's home around his pool, because there's nothing social happening really out there. So we're just going to go visit a friend at his house for the weekend. It just happens to be on the bay in Fire Island.
Perfect.
So.
He helped design the interior. He designed the bar. He designed a lot of the.
Andrew is an architect. Yes. Yeah. So he designed everything. He's form and I'm function.
Perfect. Great accent too. I love talking to Andrew. I can just listen to him talk all the time.
I wish he'd drop it at this point, but
that's amazing.
He's South African. I'm like, can you just drop the accent already? I've been in the States 25 years. Come on.
Well, there's so much more to talk about, Russell. We'll definitely be coming back to talk more about wow. When's the movie? Russell the movie, when's that coming out? We're gonna talk about that later. Anyway, I want to thank you all, Morgan Sackman, Sackman Realty, Nicole Shondo, Sackman Realty, Aaron Levine, LG Insurance, and of course, the enigmatic Russell Lewis from Watermark. I have so much fun. We're gonna put some house music on, have at least 2 or 3 more drinks, and then we'll be getting out of here. I want to thank everybody out there, Totally Local Podcast, Totally_Local_Podcast on Instagram, TotallyLocalPodcast.com if you want to get to us any other way. And if you're watching this on Facebook, obviously that's where we are, so you could look up Totally Local Podcast. Find us again. Like the page and do all that stuff. Ming, always it's a pleasure.
Thank you,
Shared
Ming.
Universe Podcast Studio. Aaron, you're the man.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone, again, for spending this time with us all here on the show. Good night, good luck, and God bless.